Hello and welcome to Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries in five states, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina. I'm Ian Masters, host of Background Briefing, available 24-7 at ianmasters.com, and I'll be joining you for this hour from the studios of KPFK Radio in Los Angeles, along with Antonio Gonzalez, the president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, the nation's largest and oldest Latino voter participation organization, who have tripled Latino registration from 5.4 million in 1994 to more than 14 million in 2012. With the Latino vote tonight a critical factor in Florida, Ohio, and Illinois, hola and welcome, Antonio Gonzalez.
Hi, Ian. With you. It's going to be fun tonight.
Indeed. And also joining us is Robert Creamer, a longtime political organizer and strategist who is a partner in Democracy Partners and a senior strategist for Americans United for Change. And he has an article at the Huffington Post, Can Fascism Triumph in America? Welcome to the program, Robert Creamer.
Good to be with you, Ian.
And in many ways, tonight is a referendum on the American people, whether they will reward Donald Trump or for his bad behavior or punish him for the racism and thuggery on display at his rallies. So perhaps we will find out tonight whether fascism can triumph in America. But first, let's go to Chicago to discuss the Rust Belt Rebellion that is propelling Donald Trump on the Republican side and Bernie Sanders among Democrats, and look into whether, with a record turnout, we will be seeing an upset on the Democratic side in Illinois. Joining us is Chuy Garcia, the Cook County Commissioner, who ran against Rahm Emanuel for mayor of Chicago in 2015. Welcome to the program, Jesus Chuy Garcia.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to join you to talk about Illinois, and the polls have just closed. We are expecting results to be trickling in over the next hour or so, but we are very optimistic about some of the reports that we've heard so far. It looks like we may surpass, for example, the 2008 presidential primary where Barack Obama won the state of Illinois. And we also expect some other good news and on the reform side of things to happen. So we are guardedly optimistic. The latest polling leading up to Election Day today was that a state which showed Bernie Sanders behind almost 40 points just 3 weeks ago had turned into a dead heat. And we believe that the last week and a half of campaigning here by Senator Sanders and all of the supporters throughout the state of Illinois gives us much reason to be very optimistic about possibly winning tonight.
Well, of course, it must be no small irony to you that Rahm Emanuel's endorsement of Hillary Clinton has hurt her and helped Bernie.
The very, very early endorsement, which took place last year, actually has turned out to be haunting Secretary Clinton as the mayor's approval rating has plummeted to a very, very low level. At one time, just 2 months ago, it was about 18%. So he has been totally invisible over the past couple of months in Chicago, and the secretary did not make any appearances with Rahm Emanuel. So he has been a big weight dragging on the Hillary Clinton candidacy as we approach Election Day. We're also very excited about what could happen with respect to the state attorney's race in Cook County, which also has turned into a major issue. The release of the video of Laquan McDonald being executed by a policeman in Chicago has really stirred the city, caused great indignation, and thrown the city into a crisis of confidence as it relates to the criminal justice system. So people are very, very interested in the results of that race, and it will also have an impact on how the city moves forward and whether there will be reform of the criminal justice system, particularly pertaining to the state attorney's office.
Well, I know you've only got a couple of minutes, Chewy, so let's take a question from Antonio and then from Robert Creamer.
Gladly.
Hi, Chewy. It's Antonio Gonzalez. ¿Cómo andas?
Good evening, Antonio. Great to be speaking with you. We're pretty excited here in Chicago. You know, speaking for the Bernie Sanders campaign, we remain very, very cautiously optimistic but upbeat, because it looks like there may be a record turnout. There were a lot of new same-day registrations that took place across the state of Illinois, and we have every reason to believe that Senator Sanders will be the primary beneficiary of that.
I have two questions for you. It seems like across these primaries, primaries with open rules have tended to benefit the senator, and primaries with closed rules have tended to benefit Hillary. What kind of primary was Illinois? First question. Then second question, Hillary Clinton has been saying that she's the unanimous beneficiary of Latino and black voting. Is Illinois fitting that pattern, or is there a variation? How are Latino and African-American voters swinging?
Well, Illinois doesn't have a winner-take-all system, so, you know, it's more open. What was your second question, Antonio?
Well, my question is, can an independent vote in the Democratic primary?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. That's my first question.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of that dynamic tonight in the results as they come in. Bernie Sanders, I believe, will do very well among Latinos. Some earlier exit polling that was reported at about 3-4 o'clock claims that Latinos were breaking in a 65-35 proportion favoring Senator Sanders. We believe that many of those are Latino millennials. Millennials were very involved, Latino millennials, in the Bernie Sanders campaign, both in Chicago and in surrounding suburbs in the metro area, in cities like Elgin, Aurora, and Joliet. So it gives us a big lift, I believe, and I think the results tonight will probably be bearing that out.
Quick question from Robert Creamer there. Do you have a question before
My brother Chewy, glad to talk
to you,
man.
How you doing, Bob?
And, of course, we're my wife, Congressman Jan Schakowsky from Chicago, and I both deeply respect Chewy and also, of course, Senator Sanders. However, both of us are back in Hillary Clinton, and I think Chewy's right. It's going to be very, very close in Illinois. Right now, it's characterized as too close to call by the NBC, at least. And I think they've done a great job with their turnout operation and their messaging operation. I will say this, though. I think fundamentally, and I'd like to ask Chewy if he disagrees, there's in the night, the Clinton campaign's already won Florida. Looks like we're going to win North Carolina. We're ahead in Ohio. I think that the odds are extremely good that she will end the night increasing her delegate lead. So the question is, notwithstanding what might happen in Illinois and Missouri, what is the path in terms of delegates that might give Senator Sanders a potential shot at the nomination, do you think, Chewy?
I haven't seen the Ohio results, but at a very early stage tonight, I believe there was only 1% reporting. You know, we're also optimistic about our prospects in Missouri. And then, of course, depending on how Illinois goes, there will be a strong push by Senator Sanders and other leaders in the Sanders campaign to reach out to and have conversations with the superdelegates, especially to share with them and to discuss some of the polling that has taken place about a potential showdown in the general election between Senator Sanders and potential Republicans. So it's a bit early for me to say exactly what the path is. Remember that in the first place, the likelihood that we would be at this juncture tonight was not seen by most political veterans and pundits, and it's been quite a journey to be able to get here. But again, we remain very guardedly optimistic that things will go positively tonight, and we'll be able to have a deeper conversation about it later tonight or perhaps tomorrow morning.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Chuy Garcia. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chuy. Good to talk to you, buddy.
And again, Chuy Garcia is the Cook County Commissioner who ran against Rahm Emanuel for mayor of Chicago in 2015. Let's now turn to the key winner-take-all state of Florida, which Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have won. And, of course, Ohio, Kasich is ahead in Ohio. But if Donald Trump were to win that, he would have an insurmountable lead and pretty much clinch the presidential nomination for the Republicans. And, of course, we're waiting on Senator Marco Rubio to say his farewell, I guess. He has been humiliated in his own state. His own governor didn't support him, and certainly his mentor, Jeb Bush, didn't support him. Joining us now is Alvaro Fernandez, the editor and publisher of ProgressoWeekly.com, a bilingual internet magazine headquartered in Miami, whose focus is on the U.S.-Cuba relationship. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alvaro Fernandez.
Hello, how are you?
And Alvaro, clearly Trump has won, Hillary has won, Rubio came in second, Cruz came in third. The two Cubans, if you will, didn't they got rolled by Trump?
Yes, and actually the big loser is Marco Rubio. When you consider he is the senator from Florida, he had guaranteed he would win Florida. And he spoke words a few weeks ago, which I believe he would like to take back right now, and he said the winner of Florida will be the Republican nominee. Of course, he thought he would win Florida. He's like you very well said, he got rolled. The only county he will win is Miami-Dade County, where is, you know, his home county. But everywhere else in the state, he has lost and lost very big.
And Antonio, do you have a question for Alvaro?
Well, you know, when Alvaro, I was looking at the results right now, and it has Marco with like 28 and Ted Cruz with 17. And I know they lost, and they were expected to lose given the polling data and so forth. But when you add them together, they actually outpoll Donald Trump. And I'm wondering, in South Florida, is this going to be seen as a sign of weakness of the Cuban lobby? What is the analysis of the exile community? And I know that you know that Marco comes from the most hardcore wing of the exile community, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And Antonio, what this is showing in Florida, anyway, is the change. The demographics have changed in this state, and in Miami too, by the way. But in the state, and yeah, the Cuban vote is very important in Florida because it's a very large block here in Miami-Dade County. But the rest of the state, you know, there are other Latino groups, as you well know. And there, you know, new people have come in, young people, even young Cubans are now voting Democrat. So, you know, it's what I'm seeing, what I'm foreseeing is, you know, what is happening in Florida and what will be happening over the years in Florida. And I've said, and I mentioned that Marco was the big loser for a number of reasons, Antonio. Many people have started to believe already for a while that Marco had no chance of winning this race. But one of the conversations going around was, okay, then he turns his focus on the governor's race in a couple of years. But even that is in question right now when a sitting senator from the state of Florida can't even win his own state. When he won the Senate seat in 2010, he did extremely well in the middle part of the state, you know, the Orlando to Tampa I-4 corridor. In this election, he has not won one county in that area. So you know, it's.
So what do you attribute to what do you attribute that, Alvaro?
First of all, the you know, Marco Rubio has not, you know, people are onto him. Let's put it that way. Marco Rubio has promised everything to everybody and delivered nothing to anyone. And you know, you can talk pretty like he does. You can look good on camera, you know, but you know, after a while, people catch up and catch on. And you know, I think he lost this election when Chris Christie just undid him in that debate a few weeks about 4 weeks ago, when they saw that this guy is just a machine who, you know, yeah, he speaks freely, but all he does is spews out talking points. And, you know, the state of Florida, I believe, is onto him, and voters in the state of Florida are onto him. So unless he makes a huge comeback down the line, this might be the end for Marco Rubio.
A quick question.
One more follow-up, Ian, to Alvaro. What are the implications, if any, of Trump and Hillary's victory for future U.S.-Cuba policy?
It goes to it again. Shows you that, you know, the things have changed. Both Trump and Hillary Clinton have spoken in favor of what is happening, what Obama is doing with Cuba right now. And you know, if not, you know, they neither would have done very well in this state. And, you know, Hillary has done extremely well in Miami-Dade County and almost every county in the state. She's done very well, Antonio. It goes to show you how Florida has changed. We saw this change in 08, even bigger in 12. And in 16, it could be terribly important again.
And Bob Creamer, do you have a quick question for Alvaro before we let him leave?
Sure. And by the way, my wife, Congressman Schakowsky, is going with the president to Cuba next week, and it's such a great thing that this crazy failed policy has been eliminated. But my question really is, in Florida, to what extent do you think young Cuban Americans, well, the Cuban American community writ large, will go in the general election now? I mean, what kind of percentage break do you think it'll have?
That's a great question. And right now it's a 50-50, believe it or not.
That's wonderful.
But we will see. We'll see how all this breaks, works out, and who represents each party, you know? It looks like it's going to be Trump, and, you know, people are saying Hillary. Others are saying, no, Sanders still has a chance. We will see. But let me finish with this. In Miami, just to give you an idea how things have changed, the mayor of Miami Beach announced today that he will be traveling as mayor of Miami Beach to Cuba. It's the first time a mayor from South Florida has ever done anything like that.
I mean, to what extent particularly with if Trump is the candidate, to what extent does his virulent anti-immigrant, and I realize Cuban Americans think of themselves, you know, as exile or of course multi-generational Americans, but to what extent does that sense of anti-Hispanic hysteria that is part of the Trump movement going to color Cuban American voting, or Cuban Americans who identify themselves as Latinos or Hispanics, not just Cubans? Do you think
the young voters are going to go, you know, huge against Trump, and Trump will be clobbered, destroyed in the central part of the state where, you know, the Puerto Ricans vote.
Right.
So, you know, I think the Latino vote, if Trump is the nominee, the Latino vote will be decisive and terribly important in November, you know, in this race. And I think it's going to be Trump's undoing in Florida anyway.
Well, Alvaro Fernandez, I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And again, Alvaro Fernandez is the editor and publisher of ProgressoWeekly.com, a bilingual internet magazine headquartered in Miami, whose focus is the U.S.-Cuba relationship. And I guess, Robert Creamer, Trump's resounding victory in Florida perhaps can be seen as a step towards whether fascism can triumph in America. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with more of Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries in five states. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. But let's turn to Ohio, where Kasich is ahead of Trump, and we're joined by Bob Fitrakis, who is a professor of political science at Columbus State Community College in Ohio, where he is also the editor of the Free Press newspaper in Ohio's capital, Columbus. Welcome to Pacifica's national coverage of the primaries.
Bob, oh, glad to be on.
Fitrakis. So, Bob, Kasich's ahead. Hillary Clinton seems to have an insurmountable lead. So, is that the headline?
Well, it depends. I guess I mean, Bernie was put in a lot of stuff. The early votes coming in are primarily the early voting, the absentee voting. And that reflects overwhelmingly black voters who were made to wait in line for 7 hours in 2004, as well as older voters. So until some of these college towns report in, for example, Athens, Ohio, or Bowling Green, you don't really know how well Bernie's going to do. The John Kasich, of course, was touring the state with Mitt Romney. But more importantly, we heard reports that, of course, the OSU football coach, Urban Meyer, endorsed Kasich for governor, a very low-key guy. And there was a report out of Ohio University, not Ohio State, where he's the coach, that the whole football team showed up to vote, and they were voting in the Republican primary. So there seems to be a tremendous effort here to stop Trump in Ohio. John Kasich, who I ran against for Congress in 1992, still does policy. He's conservative, but a bit flexible, and he actually uses numbers and comes up with policies. So I think he's the last wing of the policy Republicans. Everyone else over there is post-policy, and I think Trump has resorted to pure authoritarianism.
So maybe I'm ahead of myself because I think we've got, 12% reporting, but still you've got Kasich at 44%, Trump at 32%, Cruz at 14%, and Rubio at 6%. And on the Democratic side with 10% reporting, you've got Hillary Clinton with 68% and Sanders with 30. That seems like a big lead.
Yeah, but again, a lot of the early percentage of the vote, what you're seeing is a lot of the early vote, which was overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. We have extensive early voting here, and a lot of it is also absentee vote that will favor her dramatically. The leads, in both cases, look insurmountable, but you still haven't, to any great extent, gotten any of the big college town voting coming in. Unfortunately for Bernie Sanders, Ohio State, one of his best bases, was on spring break this week.
So,
and one of the largest universities in America.
Sure. So, Antonio, do you have a question for Bob Fitrakis?
Well, I'm just wondering what you expect the weight of the college towns to be. I mean, is it big enough to countervail the big African American early vote for Hillary Clinton? We saw a similar scenario in Michigan where it looked like Hillary was ahead early, and then Bernie came on, and it was a seesaw back and forth. And how similar is the electorates in Ohio compared to Michigan?
Well, Ohio is regarded as the greatest test market in America, that essentially you're looking at numbers that are almost identical to the U.S. Census, except for perhaps a little lower on the Hispanic vote and a little lower on the Asian vote. But, you know, 12-13% blacks, a fairly decent mix between the North that's industrial, the kind of post-industrial educated center, Appalachia in the South. So I think Ohio is probably the most reflective state. And another problem is, you know, the voting here in Ohio. My understanding, we're getting reports from Athens, Ohio, OU, where, you know, a lot of students are voting for Bernie, but a very large number of them are being forced to vote provisionally, particularly those living off campus. So even if it gets close, there's a question of whether those votes will be counted. About 17% of those should be rejected outright if we look at past elections. So the Bernie surge was very, very late here. On Friday alone, I know they made 100,000 calls, came into the state from all around America. They knocked on 24,000 doors on Saturday and 12,000 on Sunday, and you had 7,000 people up at Ohio State. So a lot of people, though, had already voted, and I think that's what you're seeing initially. So I expect that this is going to narrow, but at this point, there isn't enough evidence to say that Bernie can overcome the early lead that's this large.
And a follow-up question to you. I saw a piece of data from one of the early exit polls that 7% of the Republican primary voters were, in fact, Democrat crossovers.
Yeah,
can
that's
you make heads or tails out of that for me?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, not
what
only that.
That?
Well, what happens, it's a firewall. There's and a lot of those people are liberal and progressive Democrats. In fact, the Green Party here, which got over 100,000 votes for in the last gubernatorial election, about 3.3% of all the votes in the state, was having a discussion on their Facebook with many Green Party members saying that they were going in to vote against Trump because they thought he represented fascism, and others just couldn't pull the trigger. Because if you do that in Ohio, you become registered as a Republican for 2 years. It actually happened in large number in 2006 when J. Kenneth Blackwell, the controversial Secretary of State who sort of rigged the election for Bush, a lot of people crossed over from the Democratic Party in order to attempt to defeat him. So, yeah, you're seeing a massive amount of people, particularly progressives, openly discussing that they're not going to vote in the primary, in the Democratic primary, or even in the small number of Greens, but they're crossing over to vote against Trump.
Well, let me just tell our audience something that should not be a great surprise, and that is that Marco Rubio has dropped out of the presidential race. Robert Creamer, do you have a question for Bob Fitrakis?
Sure, Bob. By the way, I think the Clinton projections would confirm Bob's view that it'll get closer in Ohio. I mean, the Clinton campaign's view is that it's going to be pretty close. And but I'd like to ask Bob, to what extent does Senator Sherrod Brown's support for Hillary do for her support, particularly with respect to people who care about trade, which, of course, has been his trademark issue, Sherrod Brown?
Well, I think had Sherrod Brown endorsed Bernie Sanders, which to me would have been consistent with his own tremendous voting record against NAFTA and the free trade agreements, I think Bernie Sanders would have won this state. Nina Turner, the very popular Cleveland-based state senator, and, of course, Marcy Kaptur at the last second, who led the battle literally with caravans around this state when NAFTA was being debated in the 1990s, at the last minute endorsed Bernie Sanders. So, again, Sherrod Brown is the standard for progressive Dems. The fact that he endorsed Clinton has gone a long way for creating a firewall against Bernie Sanders.
So is that to say that how would you then describe what's being called the Rust Belt Rebellion, Bob?
Oh, the we've got hollowed out cities, the Pretenders sang about, Akron, Ohio, and these developments. I mean, look, who would have thought, I've written a book on the idea of democratic socialism in America, to stand in the hall with 7,000 overwhelmingly young people who are cheering at an openly democratic socialist candidate who wasn't supposed to get this far, and to see newbies, people who have never done politics before, essentially running the campaign for Bernie Sanders. I went over and did some reporting on their headquarters. They set up headquarters in the highest crime black area of the city, a place that you'd never see a Clinton campaign or any other mainstream campaign. They were in a fashion bug that was out of business in a gutted corridor over on Main Street that's primarily known for shootings in heroin and crack trade. So it's really amazing to watch this open rebellion of people going along with the Democratic socialist. I think Kasich is just enough of a maverick in the Republican Party. Remember, he actually helped craft the budget bill that balanced the budget and went along with a compromise to tax the rich a little more. He's a very quirky guy, but he accepted, the money from the federal government to insure 250,000 Ohioans on affordable health care. He got beat up really bad in his first year in office when he went after labor, but he wasn't an ideologue. He essentially decided to leave them alone. So, again, he does policy. He looks at the numbers, and the Trump rebellion in this state, and particularly a lot of colleges in this state, Antioch, Overland, incredibly liberal colleges, the largest universities in America, Ohio State, Columbus State, with 30,000 students in the capital, Ohio University, 30,000 students, is that a lot of that stuff, his commercials, Trump's commercials, look like he was the Fourth Reich, really scared the hell out of people, including myself. And I consider myself incredibly jaded.
Hey, Bob, Bob Cramer, I couldn't agree more with you, by the way, but the energy of the young people who are and it is clear millennials, this thing about socialism, they just don't know from that. They could care less. They care about people's policies and want change. I do think that the question really is, if Trump is the nominee, and I think tonight it looks increasingly like that given his win in Florida, even if Kasich wins in Ohio, do you think all of that energy will come together for Clinton if she is the Democratic nominee? And what do you think Hillary would need to do to engage that and mobilize it?
I don't, you know, other than the Democratic Party regulars, what she had going for her here, you know, was the sample ballot in a black community that seemed not the young people as much, but comfortable with whatever her brand is, which I've never really understood. I mean, she has a habit of sucking energy out of rooms. She almost has an anti-charisma. I don't know what it is. It's not that she's not well-spoken. It's almost like she's overly cautious with every single word. Well, Bernie's, you know, almost some of the humor is almost stick. It's funny. You know, when he was rallying about her speech, how much she got paid for it, how extraordinarily it must be, and it had to be shared with the world. It was so brilliant and, you know, worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. So,
Bernie is Larry Sanders, let's be clear. I mean, they're the same person, really. But the yes. question is, though, from your point of view, I mean, obviously, particularly from what you said about Trump, I mean, Trump would be a disaster for America.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, I think
so what,
the,
what
needs, you know, I mean, when Noam Chomsky says that he's drawing on the same base of support, and, you know, the studies among American political scientists, which I include myself, which says the most authoritarian forces in our society, those that, you know, they just don't like Mexicans. They hate anything foreign and this mythical assault on whatever
right,
the American
right.
way of life is.
Right. I mean, do you think that's enough? Or what else does the Clinton campaign need to do if it wins the primary, to engage the kind of energy of young people? Is it enough that Trump's the opposition, or do you think that something else is necessary?
You know, I can't see that people aren't going to come back to her in the large numbers they supported Bernie. I mean, there has to be a direct appeal. There also has to be somebody on that ticket that can reach out to these young voters, someone that has impeccable progressive credential. She also needs the pledge to get out there and work for every progressive. We know she likes to work for, you know, people that are the new, you know, the Democratic Leadership Council, you know, wishy-washy moderate Dems, but those ain't selling this year. She needs this energy, so she's got to cut a deal with Bernie and the Bernie supporters, and it's got to be an honest deal, and she's got to be able to sell it. The Clintons themselves, if you go back to, if they're a partnership, if you go back to 1992, right, they left NAFTA out of the platform hearings. You know, I know I was the platform spokesperson for Governor Brown at the time, and Labor got up and defended them and said, we don't need it in there, it's just good strategy. No one in Labor thought he really was going to push NAFTA. But if you look at where their money comes from, she's got to do something about that. You know, I think here in Ohio, a lot of the hardcore, they're not Democrats, they're Bernie-crats. You know, some of them may defect to Jill Stein, who will be the Green Party candidate. I mean, they've got to figure out something that will give them a signal, not just that they're stopping authoritarianism in Trump, but there's actually a better future under Hillary Clinton.
Well, maybe you and I ought to team up and get our friend Sherrod Brown to rescind his statement on NBC tonight that he was he really wouldn't accept a vice presidential nomination.
Right. Well, look.
That would go a long way, you know, and
right.
particularly to winning Ohio. I mean, Sherrod's got longstanding credentials.
So, absolutely. So, gentlemen, I feel we have to move on to the one state where there's some ambiguity. And Bob Fotrakis, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it as well. Thank you.
And again, Bob Fotrakis is a professor of political science at Columbus State Community College in Ohio, where he's also the editor of the Free Press newspaper in Ohio's capital, Columbus. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with more of Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries in five states. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And now we're going to Illinois, where there is a little more of a race, although I take it that Hillary Clinton is still ahead. And Scott Stennis is joining us. Scott Stennis is the cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, whose work is syndicated in over 125 newspapers. What's the latest news from what is perhaps the only piece of drama in terms of a cliffhanger tonight?
Well, right now, Hillary is ahead by, it looks like, about 5,000 votes. It's only 3% of the, well, now it's 10% of the, sorry, now it's 10% of the precincts, and she stretched the lead out. It's still kind of holding at 55-44. None of the counties have come in at 100%, except for one up in the upper northeastern part of the state. So, you know, it's going to be a long night. And the suspicion is that Sanders, when Cook County, where Chicago is, and the rest of the in some of the collar counties, we call them here, around the Chicago area, are going to come in. You know, she was endorsed. This is one of the funniest stories that really didn't get a lot of national attention. She was endorsed by Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago. Rahm Emanuel's approval ratings right now are in the teens. His standing among African-American voters is non-existent. In fact, he had to suppress the Laquan McDonald shooting video. This, he's in great trouble for this, of course. In fact, some of his some of the other people who are endorsed by him and his machine are probably going to lose tonight because of this. So, in fact, here's the funny part of the story, is that he endorses Hillary. Hillary refused to have a photo op with him, just to show how toxic Rahm Emanuel is.
Well, I believe didn't Bernie Sanders make a joke about not wanting to be endorsed by Mr. Kryptonite?
Yes, he thanked Mayor Emanuel for not endorsing him, which tells you all you need to know. You know, the other thing, Hillary has run as a daughter of Illinois, a daughter of Chicago, when in fact she really hasn't tapped into that very much. She was born in Chicago area. She was raised in a rather tony, upper middle class suburb in the northern suburb of Chicago. But there's not a lot of affection for her as there is, say, for President Obama, who lived in the South Side, represented that area in the state Senate, and then went on to become a U.S. Senator from Illinois. So there's not a lot of affection for her on that either. It's curious to see, when you walk around the neighborhoods, as I did this weekend, and just you saw virtually no Hillary signs. I saw some, but for the most part, there were Bernie signs everywhere. This is in the Chicagoland area. Now, you go down south, where Hillary does quite well, and what we call downstate Illinois, you know, I think Hillary's probably going to do much better. People don't recognize or realize that southern Illinois is actually further south than Kentucky, geographically. So, and it has that sort of sensibility and that type of politics. So perhaps that's going to help her win the night here in Illinois, but it's going to be a close call. It's going to be an interesting race.
You know, this is Bob Kramer. Let me just note a quick thing on the signs. As my wife is Congressman Jan Schakowsky, the Hillary campaign really didn't do signs, which our view was that was a terrible idea for her, that she needed a lot of signs.
So is that right?
Why there's not a lot of Hillary signs. They didn't provide hardly any.
Oh, that's bizarre, because she's got that nifty logo.
Yeah, I totally agree. And see, I'm a believer in yard signs. I think yard signs save momentum and bandwagon, and you just proved the point. Anyway, that's enough said.
Well, I also want to jump in, just to full disclosure and to some self-effacing here. The Chicago Tribune last week endorsed Marco Rubio.
Oh, that was a great move, wasn't it?
Good work.
Yeah, I don't think you're here, Donald Trump, thanking us for that, but that may have played a part in this whole drama this evening.
Antonio, do you have a question for Scott Stennis?
Well, I'm just wondering if the African-American pattern that we're seeing in the southern states, is it projecting itself into the Midwest? It looks like it in Ohio, perhaps, but Illinois looks a little bit closer. Do you have any information on how African-Americans broke?
Well, some of our polling here still shows that the African American community, particularly in the Chicago area, still has a lot of affection and a lot of very warm memories of the Clinton years. And so I think Hillary, as one of your earlier guests pointed out, she's not the warmest, kind and cuddly as politician as her husband is, but they still feel some very deep affection for that family. So I think she's trading off that. So yeah, it still translates up here, at least in the urban areas of Chicago and the surrounding areas.
Well, I question that because the race looks much closer. Because you don't have a gigantic Latino vote in Illinois. You got something.
And Chicago itself is about a third, 25-27%. It's bigger than you think. But go on. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it's in the teens, but does that explain the closeness of the race? Because if the African Americans are going hard the other way towards Hillary, why is the race so close?
Is it as hard? Are you going to see the percentages you've been seeing, say, in the Deep South? No, you're not going to see that. But what you are going to see here is a very strong turnout for what we call North Shore liberals here. It's where different ethnicities, white, also Jewish, are going to come out for a Bernie Sanders more than they're going to come out for a Hillary Clinton. They're going to come out for a more liberal candidate there. But in terms of the African-American community, you're right as far as it goes, that she won't get 90% of that vote up here.
I mean, my wife, Congressman Chukowski, is in favor of Clinton, of course, and has worked very hard for her. But I got to tell you, her district is going to be very close indeed. The 9th District is the north side of Chicago and the North Shore, the north suburbs in Cook County, and that's going to be a lot of Bernie support there.
So just to remind our audience, on the Republican side, of course, it does look like pretty much a sweep for Donald Trump tonight. He's won all but Ohio, and that hasn't been called yet, but he's won very handily everywhere else. Bob, does that make him make America one step closer to fascism?
Well, as I said in the piece I put in the Huffington Post, I think the odds are very, very strong that Trump wins the nomination. As I said, in August last year, he's capitalizing on the sense of frustration.
By the way, they're just calling Ohio for Kasich.
For Kasich, yeah. And Ohio is also called for Clinton, as I understand it.
Yes.
He's capitalizing on that, and I think a lot of the Washington elites had no sense of the kind of unhappiness that there is around the country in the fact that their incomes haven't gone up for 30 years and the fact that all of the 48% increase in gross domestic product per capita in the United States has gone to the top 1%. I mean, that's a very frustrating thing for people, and once that happens, the question is, who are you going to blame? And Trump blames all those immigrants. I mean, he uses all of the kind of traditional fascist tactics. The difference in the United States and, say, Europe in the 30s or South America in the 70s and 80s is that he's managed to offend huge chunks of the population. The demographic diversity of America, I think, is our principal protector if we organize in the fall. And presents actually the opportunity for a real progressive sweep. On the other hand, a grave danger if Donald Trump, by some incredible means, is elected President of the United States.
Well, let's bring in Clarissa Hayward, who's a political theorist at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, whose research focuses on questions central to understanding and evaluating political life. Clarissa, you're joining Scott Stantis, who is a cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, and also Antonio Gonzalez, the head of the Southwest Voter Organization, which is a huge Latino voter participation organization, and Robert Creamer, a longtime political organizer and strategist who has an article at the Huffington Post, Can Fascism Triumph in America? What's the latest from Missouri?
Well, first of all, hi, and it's nice to talk with all of you. Right now, our polls closed only just about 45 minutes ago, so it's a little bit early to know for sure what's going on, but the early results are showing that Trump is leading Cruz narrowly and that Clinton has a wide lead over Sanders. But again, this is really early. We have, I think, less than 1% reporting at this point.
And does Antonio, do you have a question?
No, I was just looking at the results, and also in Missouri, there's only 2% in, and again, a big lead for Hillary, 64-33, but that's got to be the early vote, and heavily
organized
by the Clinton campaign. And I think we're going to be waiting on Illinois and Missouri for a while. And they look to be tightening up. Illinois tightened up as well. It's now 9 points between them. It was 11.
Right. So, and some of our polls that came out in the past week showed a very, very tight race between Clinton and Sanders. So I agree with you that it's too early, really, to put much weight on that.
And I would say that the Clinton campaign's own polls believe that it's very, very close there. I mean, so I think it'll be very tight in both states. I agree.
Can I jump in and ask Bob a question here?
Absolutely,
Bob. You know, I'm not one. I'm a conservative. I worked in Republican politics a million years ago before I got into editorial cartooning, and so I'm always been loath to say he's a fascist, she's a fascist. You know, wouldn't you like to be a fascist too? You know, but but going down the list of Donald Trump, and you know, he's going to be the nominee of the Republican Party. The people can kid themselves and think that there's roadblocks and everything else. This is going to happen.
Right.
But you click down the list of what a fascist, what defines a fascist, the cult of the leader, cult of dynamic movement, militarists, scapegoating, overtone or undertones of violent speech, I mean, state control of the economy. I mean, all of that, it just goes like, yeah, Trump. I mean, this is really what we're facing, isn't it? I mean, would it be safe to say, I mean, this isn't 1930s Germany. It's not 1920s Italy, but, you know, Democratic institutions are fragile. And this guy, I've got to tell you, scares the hell out of me.
I completely agree with you for all the reasons you just elaborated. I mean, you know, in 1935, Sinclair Lewis, the famous novelist, wrote the book, It Can't Happen Here, the satirical novel about precisely a guy like Trump becoming president and then consolidating power in a kind of a plutocratic totalitarian way. Now, I don't know if that could happen exactly, but I do know that Trump could do enormous damage to America, and I agree completely with your analysis. The other factor that you didn't mention, which I think is exactly all the ones you did mention right on, is that, you know, fascists tend to legitimate saying out loud things that normally people just kind of whisper in their living rooms.
Yeah.
And he's just done that with his complete, you know, what he says about political correctness really is that outrageous, bigoted language, either about women or Hispanics or African American, whatever, is legitimate dialogue. And I think that that is part of what is fueling the kind of anger and kind of proto-violence. And we, you know, haven't seen real violence, but this kind of the kind of level of vitriol that we see in the Trump movement.
Well, they actually had a Trump supporter. I'm not sure if you saw Rubio's speech this evening when he was conceding in Florida and saying he's suspending his campaign. There's a Trump guy in the audience starts chanting and start and being the petulant child that his hero is. And Rubio from the stage says, "Don't worry, you won't be beaten up at this rally."
well, let me ask Clarissa Hayward in Missouri. What's your sense? What worries me, Clarissa, is that as Trump becomes more and more the Republican nominee, my fear is that all will be forgiven, if not forgotten. That he'll be taken seriously by both the press and by what's left of the Republican establishment, and all the terrible things he said will be forgotten unless people organize and remind America about who this guy is and what he said. And what's your sense in that regard?
Well, you know, my sense is, at least here in Missouri, that his supporters are, and I was listening to the early parts of the show, so I think this isn't so different from the other folks who've weighed in, but his supporters in this state are largely these more rural white voters who are attracted to this authoritarianism because they see it as something that's going to protect them from what they view as threatening outsiders. So I think that in terms of the organizing against that, we've also seen a lot of energy organizing against Trump in St. Louis last Friday and also up in Chicago. So I do think there's a very dedicated, organized, anti-Trump contingent on the left and in the Democratic Party. How the Republicans will react when or if he wins the primary is a different question. I don't think that on the show today you've talked yet about the possibility of a contested or a brokered primary, but I think it's possible that we might see him running as a third-party candidate, in which case I think we'd continue to see a lot of anti-Trump organizing from the establishment Republican Party as well.
Well, let's do a quick round of closing statements from our guests because we're running out of time here. And Scott Standis, a last word from you?
Well, quick news here from Illinois. We still don't have very many numbers from Cook County, so keep your eyes on that. Hillary is still ahead by about 10 points right now, but that's very, very early with about 17% of the vote. As far as going forward, the Republicans, it's going to be Kasich for God knows why. Cruz versus Trump. Trump will continue to win. He will go on to Cleveland and be the Republican nominee in late July.
And Clarissa Haywood? A final word.
I agree with much of what's been said before. I agree it's really hard at this point to see a path to the nomination for Sanders. Some of the polling here in this part of the country suggests that although Sanders would beat Trump in a general election, Trump would beat Clinton. So I guess my concluding thought is that I am very nervous about the way this is going and about the prospects of a general election between Trump and Clinton.
Well, I thank all of you for joining us here this evening. This has been Pacifica Radio's national coverage of today's presidential primaries in five states, Florida, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, and Ohio. I'm Ian Masters, host of Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And we've been broadcasting from the studios of KPFK Radio in Los Angeles. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and engineer Gary Barker. And stay tuned for more of Pacifica's coverage of today's primaries with KPFK's news director, Ernesto Arce, as your host for the next hour. And bye for now.